inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Alex Worley. Welcome to the show. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. My guest today is Jocelyn Johnson, the founder of Video Inc. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Give me the elevator pitch. What is Video Inc.?
We are the go-to industry trade for the online video business.
Okay.
So we essentially cover the news and deals that are happening in anything that's related to streaming.
So who are the type of people that watch your stuff?
Anybody who's working in the online video industry is our reader. They're the executives, the knowledge workers, the actual business people who are building programming for the internet.
A lot of times when we have guests come on our show, they created a business out of a desire to solve a problem in their own life. And so I'm curious for you, did you have a similar need? Or what inspired you to want to start your business?
Yeah, absolutely. This is my second business. So I was running another business that was PR and communications focused in the same area. So I would work with clients like Funny or Die or Daily Motion or Machinima. Okay. And I started to realize there was two problems. One was when I was coming up in my career, I would read the Hollywood trades every day to kind of inform my boss on who was making what deals and what was happening in the business. And that didn't really fundamentally exist. So if I wanted to teach my juniors, I had to verbally, like oral history, download what had been happening in the space. So that was one side of it. And then the other side of it was that my clients didn't really have a dedicated space for their news. And I thought that was holding the industry back from moving forward. And so that's why I launched Video Inc. to really drive the business forward.
I'm curious, did you always want to become an entrepreneur? Or was this something that just kind of happened?
I think I was an entrepreneur ever since I was a kid.
Yeah, why do you think that is?
A little like detective entrepreneur type.
And stuff.
I did. I like went and tried to sell things to my neighbors. I was always, totally. I'm just like an entrepreneurial, like inventive, go get it type of person.
When did you have your first business? Was it right out of college? Was it in school?
My first official business was when I was 25.
And what was that?
It was a PR company.
Okay, the PR business.
Online video.
What's been the hardest part about being an entrepreneur so far on your specific journey?
For me, it's been having two different businesses that I've been running that have different business models.
Still?
Yeah. Okay. So having to actually navigate my brain space between two different business structures, one that was client services driven, where you do a great job, the money comes. The other one, which was deficit driven, we took in venture capital, angel investors, and we use that to accelerate our runway. So they're just different mindsets and different business models.
If you had to choose, and I know this can be tough because this could be like asking a parent to pick between their two children, but if you could only have one business to scale it and take it to its full potential, which one would it be?
Video Inc. for sure.
Video Inc.
I mean, introduced me as the founder of Video Inc. So absolutely.
So why that? I'm curious.
I think that the opportunity for a business like Video Inc., where we have multiple revenue streams that we can really dig into, is exciting. It's challenging. It pushes me to push past the threshold that I've not had in my life before.
Yeah.
So on the communication side, it's a little bit easier, right? I mean, to a degree. You hit a ceiling, you've achieved a certain amount, and there's not a lot of area to climb and to grow from there.
So. Who are the types of people that like are your dream 100, we'll call them? Who are the ideal partners that you go after?
Ooh, that is a tough one. The ideal partners I think we would go after would have to be either big syndication partners like AP or Reuters. They have syndication deals with the varieties, Hollywood Reporters, TechCrunches of the world, and that would be meaningful for us in terms of audience development. So
okay.
I think that would be it.
What's your magic wand scenario? If you could just grow your business to any level, how would you do it? What's your magic wand?
I think it's investment. It's getting capital. Media businesses are hard to raise capital against, especially on the B2B side. So that has been a struggle for us because we monetize in a different way. We monetize against the quality of our reader versus quantity. So
have you not raised capital yet? And you're
we've had
to?
Angel investors over time, but we haven't done an official early stage round or a Series A round.
Has that been a strategic move or has that just been as a lack of, haven't found the right strategic partners yet?
It ultimately comes down to finding the right strategic partners, but also with the B2B side, I think there's a potential for revenue that supersedes the need for capital. So we're not like a technology company where we need to hire developers and engineers and have a lot of significant overhead in terms of staffing and marketing needs. So for us, raising capital had to be done at the right time, and also had to be done judiciously, because we don't want to, you know, take ourselves into evaluation territory that would be impossible to match.
Nowadays, there's over a billion apps and you know, information overload. I always love to figure out, you know, what are the newest, best apps, tools, gadgets, resources, and different things like that. So do you have any that you specifically use for business or for life to be more productive, to be more organized?
Yeah, I've actually recently taken over a lot of my assistant duties just out of sheer management. Like, I wanted to be
so in, your assistant, you started doing their responsibilities.
I started taking some of those back. Like, I wanted to be able to manage my scheduling a little bit differently. And so I've really liked an app called Calendly. It allows you to build different parameters for meetings and set, and that's just like streamlined productivity for both of us. I'm able to stay on top of my meetings and know when that's happening, and she's able to focus on other projects that have more meaningful impact for us. So
I don't think I've ever met somebody who said, I'm taking back the responsibilities that I gave to my assistant.
I thought through that actually a lot, because that's the intention of an assistant. But I think there are certain things that it's important for the manager or the CEO to know, and having an intimate knowledge of which meetings are getting scheduled when and the priority of those is sometimes something that you have to have your hands on, right? I'd rather my assistant be doing other things that actually help me stay informed on my business in other ways.
Could you take us back to a place in your life where you had a really big struggle and an obstacle that you overcame?
I think every founder does, but it's actually been an uphill battle with Video Inc. just because it's a different type of business model. And it's also been, there's been a lot more learning curve for me. I mean, when you're starting a services business, you're doing that because you're inherently already skilled at something. If you're an agent and you break out into an agency, you probably have clients. If you're a PR person, same thing. But Video Inc. was very different. I had to learn, you know, digital ad sales and how to monetize CPM and all these other different layers of that type of business. I think it ultimately comes down to finding your advisory board, pulling those people in and tapping them for their expertise and guidance to help you learn. Do a ton of research if you can. Surround yourself with the people who are empowered in that category where you maybe aren't as strong. And then definitely take space. I've found that when I'm in high intensity place, if I don't actually just take some space to break away and clear my head, I'm not actually equipped to handle the big decision making that I need to be able to do.
I love that advice.
Yeah, sometimes people feel that's wrong. Like, oh, if I'm in this moment of adversity, it means I have to work more. Actually, you could be better served if you just stopped working and just took some space, and your brain will still be marinating on that, working on it in the back mind, but you'll be more equipped to make the hard decision because you gave it some space to breathe.
That's great advice. You definitely have to unplug and step away. Mm-hmm. Jocelyn Johnson is my guest right now. She's the founder of Video Inc. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs is what we do here. And tell us a little bit of elevator pitch about Video Inc. real quick.
Video Inc. is the go-to online industry trade for executives in the online video space.
Okay. And what inspires you most about what you guys are doing right now?
I think we're really actually moving the needle on the business. I mean, on the industry, much in the way that TechCrunch really escalated how the tech business was going. Like, we're doing the same thing for the video space. So
in the video space, what are the mistakes you see people making? Nowadays, everybody's capitalizing on social media and implementing native videos uploaded on there. They're using YouTube. Video has become one of the huge platforms that everyone's capitalizing on. What are the mistakes you see people doing when they're using video?
I think everybody has this sense that video is going to be the end all be all, and that's going to be their route. And so they're sort of doing video for the sake of doing video. And I just think with any business, chasing a trend that might not be the right fit for your business is not a good
decision.
So
what are some do's and don'ts? Do you have practical do's and don'ts for us?
Practical do's and don'ts when it comes to video. I mean,
you're full of it. I know you are. You're ready.
It's the same advice that you'd give anybody who's going into any business. It's really your video strategy should reflect what your users are needing, not what you think that they want or think that they need, because you want to be in the trend zone, right? So yeah. I think that if you're going to produce video, it should be purposeful and it should be done right, and it doesn't have to be mass volume. And maybe it captures a small audience to start, but buying audience and arbitraging that is not a win-win game.
Some people will say you got to have high quality, and some people will argue the quality doesn't matter, it's the content that matters. What would you say? Is it the quality or is it the content?
I would say It's really a little bit of both. I know that that's not really a,
it just
a
depends
strong,
on the context.
Opinionated answer, but live video on Facebook is not inherently high quality per se, but people who are talking to their camera and people who are engaging with the viewers in that way, like that experience can't really be taken away just because it's low quality. Whereas some stuff that's very high polished, high quality docuseries that looks beautiful may never really capture a huge audience. And so I think it really just is a nice balance between a little bit of both.
Founder of Video Inc., Jocelyn Johnson, I appreciate you for coming on
cool.
the show.
Thank you.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
So when people first hear about MediShare, they have questions, some really good questions, starting with the obvious, what is it? Well, MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. It's not health insurance. It's a different way of doing things, which leads us to the next question. Why do people do this? Why do they become MediShare members? Here are two of the biggest reasons. Number one, people feel good about it. They're not trapped in a plan that makes them pay for things they don't believe in. They know their money is going to help people. And the second reason, people save a lot of money. Maybe you've heard us mention the typical family saves about $500 a month switching to MediShare. And one more big question, does it work? The answer is yes, 1,000 times yes, or 400,000 times, since that's how many MediShare members there are, and they've shared over $2 billion in medical expenses. So easy to find out right now how MediShare can work for you. Call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
The expert.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. My guest today is my dear friend, Cole Hatter, an investor and entrepreneur. It's great to have you on the show, brother.
It's great to be here, Mark.
So what are you up to today? I know you got your incredible event, Thrive, coming up, the second one. What else?
Yeah, so Thrive is private. We're in the last 90 days, so that's kind of the 9 to 5 right now. As you know, as an entrepreneur with multiple projects, depending on what quarter or season you're in, it's different. So right now it's everything Thrive, trying to get as many people to come as possible there. I'm continuing my real estate business as well. Been doing a lot of public speaking as well, and a lot of interviews like this. So it's kind of a diverse mix every single week.
I love what you're doing with Thrive. I think it's incredible. I can't wait to be a part of that again for this year. Real quick, just kind of give us what it's about. I know it's about making money matter, which is kind of like, you know, your mantra, so to speak. Tell us a little bit about what Thrive's about.
Yeah, so in my early 20s, I made a bunch of money. 2008 recession came, I was only in real estate, lost everything. 2011 came back and made 10 times more money. So I've had money twice. And in that in-between season of having none at all, I looked at my previous 4 to 5 years of having a lot, and I spent it all, cars, wakeboard, boats, and all of that, and said, well, this sucks that not only is all that stuff gone now, but I have nothing to show for the success that I've had. I didn't do anything that mattered. I spent it, all that stuff's gone. And so in my second round of business, where I've gone on to since make millions of dollars, I said, this time I'm gonna make my money matter. Still have great cars, take great vacations, but I wanna do things with my wealth, with my businesses, with my resources and affluence to do positive things in people's lives and in the world. And it caught. A lot of people asked me a lot of questions about it. I've done a lot of interviews like this and podcasts and said, well, there's obviously an audience of people who are thirsty to not just make money, that old cliche, not about success, significance, but really they're looking for using their wealth or their businesses as vehicles to make a positive change in the world. So we said, screw it, let's throw an event. So I called a lot of good friends of mine, like for the first one, Lewis Howes, John Lee Dumas, Jordan Harbinger, Tucker Max.
You had Robert Hirschevig, Gary Vaynerchuk.
Yeah, so that was obviously not yet a personal friend, but through my connections went up, got Hirschevig from Shark Tank. And we had 22 phenomenal speakers that just came for 3 days to blow the audience's mind about how to not just make money, but make it matter. And I thought it was gonna be a 1 year event for fun. And then everyone's like more. So we're
gonna Everyone said it was the best thing ever. So
yeah, for a first year event. Yeah, many of the attendees said it's the greatest conference they've ever attended. So this year we're doing all again. We have another about 20 speakers, all new. And it's the same thing. Today's leaders, the number one income earners or the number one person, what they do, sharing how they became the best with the message of cool. Don't just go spend all your money on yourself. Make it matter in some way.
So you're obviously doing incredible things now. I love the fact that you're doing Thrive. you know, get to do interviews like this and talk a little bit about it because it's incredible. You brought together some of the best thought leaders and speakers in the world. So I want to know, though, obviously you've got a lot of success now. You're one of the best speakers. You've sold over $100 million from stage.
Right.
We'll touch on that in a little bit, just kind of as an open loop. But take me back to the beginning. I know you have an incredible story and a journey, as many of us do. But take me back to the beginning. When did you first decide, I'm going to step into entrepreneurship? I know that it started with real estate.
Yeah, so probably about eighth grade is when you start saying, when I grow up someday, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
And you know, God's put on my heart to want to help people. And so I looked at careers where I could do that as like a doctor or military. And I ended up being a firefighter. During high school, at night, I went to college classes. So my senior year of high school, when I graduated, I had all my prerequisites I needed to go into the fire academy and be a firefighter. And I did that. I was 19 years old, had my whole life figured out, got into a car accident at 21, 2 years later. They put me in a wheelchair for a while. I had to learn how to walk again. I had a traumatic brain injury. And so physically, it did not look like firefighting would ever be an option again, because you can't be helping people in a wheelchair, right?
Yeah.
Or from a wheelchair, I should say. And so in that season of having to move back in with mom and dad, I mean, I was so hurt, I had to be cared for.
Yeah.
While living with my parents again at 21, and firefighting looked like it was never going to be an option again, which I'm healthy today, right? But at that season, I didn't know. I said, I've got to have to figure out how to make money on my own somehow, some way. So that was kind of my turn towards entrepreneurship. I'd done some stuff as a kid. Like I remember, like 8 years old, pulling mistletoe and selling it door to door at Christmas to make enough money to be able to buy my family Christmas presents. And I started a clothing company in high school. So I always had that entrepreneurial bug, but never thought about being a full-time entrepreneur. I want to be a firefighter.
Yeah.
And so at 21, I said, I don't know if I'll ever walk again. I don't know what my physical capabilities will ever be. So I need to figure out how to make money on my own. And so that was it.
When most people would be crippled by something like that and let it slow them down and limit them, what first went through your head when that happened? Did you think it's all over?
Well, so immediately following it, you know, it was just a matter of trying to get my life back together, because there's a lot of details in that story that, you know, we're not talking about, where I had emotional trauma as well from people who did not survive. And so at first it was just trying to get my life together, not just learn how to walk, but emotionally be able to get through a day without falling apart. So it was a lot of self-care. And that's like really important, because a lot of people want to go have phenomenal businesses, but if you're the entrepreneur, you have to be operating at your full potential for your business to have a chance. So what made that shift for me was, number one, first, that self-care. And then number two, I guess in honor of those that I lost in those accidents, I knew that for whatever reason I was spared, they weren't. And so I had to do things in my life big enough to make it worth it for them, so that when I get to see them again, I could say, hey, look, for whatever reason I survived, but look what I did with the rest of the time I had.
Yeah.
I made this money, I made it matter in this way, and I changed this many people's lives, and I did it for you guys.
I love that part of your story, brother. Cole Hatter is my guest right now. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Cole Hatter is an investor and an entrepreneur. When did you discover your purpose, and what is it, if you could share with us?
I would say it was in Mexico, in the end of the first season of where I'd made all my money and then lost it all. So I lost it all starting 2008-09. And then in 2010, I actually broke up with my girlfriend, who later became my wife, I'll just say. So,
but Give a shout out to Sonia.
Yeah, exactly. So here I was, not making money, had sold all my toys. My girlfriend and I were no longer together. So I moved to Mexico and said, screw everything. I'm like turning my back on life. And I went down there to do humanitarian work the rest of my life, is what I thought. And 6 months into that journey of helping others with what little bit of resources I had, I mean, we're talking like a few bucks, went so far. I moved to Mexico. And so in the poorest part of one of the poorest cities of Mexico, just a few dollars could change people's lives for weeks at a time. Ended up starting an orphanage down there and all this stuff. And so I got obsessed with how little bit of money, I mean, we're talking like 40 bucks could completely feed our orphanage for a week. And so I would spend 40 bucks at Starbucks with you having a conversation like this. Yeah. So I was like, man, I want to go back to America and make millions of dollars to be able to do this a million times more than I am. And so I found part of my purpose, right? In addition to, you know, being a husband, father, and all that good stuff. Yeah. Is using my God-given talents and gifts to be able to create success in business, to take care of my family, enjoy our lives, but to make my money matter again.
And the mantra of thrive.
And it was that personal experience of doing it. A lot of people are philanthropic and write checks to the Red Cross, and if that's how people enjoy themselves, do so.
Yeah.
But something about being the one that actually gave the hungry child the food.
You see it. You
exactly.
Experience it.
Watching me pull out of my wallet money, buy something, and then watching a starving child eat, that direct connection of seeing my money matter versus just writing a check and hoping it's used, you know, to the best of its ability.
As we come to a wrap on this specific part of our segment right now, I'm just curious for, you know, let's call Steve. Steve is tuned in with us right now, and he's had success in his life, and then he had a big, you know, fallout. He's in a place of adversity right now, as you were once in your life. But unlike you, he hasn't bounced back yet. He hasn't climbed his way back to the top. What's your advice for him?
Start With Why, Simon Sinek, great book. Mm. There needs to be there's so many stories that we could talk about of millionaires losing it all, coming back, losing it all, coming back. I wasn't a millionaire previous to this, became one afterwards, right? And so I would say that you have to figure out why the money matters. So for me, Start With Why, with my orphanage, with my kids, with my wife. That was for me personally. But there has to be a bigger reason than just shiny things and fine things. You've got to have a bigger reason pulling you to be successful. And so for Steve, for instance, I would say, okay, it sucks having no money. You know what it felt like to have had money, potentially. Why does it matter? Why does making it back and more than ever before matter? Why? And that's a great place to start.
Fantastic advice. You took that to heart and you did it yourself. I love your story, brother, and I'm excited to come back because I know you're full of business advice, so we're going to talk on that in a second. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. My guest today is my dear friend Cole Hatter. It's great to have you here, brother. You're an investor. You're, you know, throwing an incredible event called Thrive. And you're also somebody that I cherish as a friend and a mentor. So it's great to have you on the show, man.
It's an honor to be here, bro.
So let's talk about speaking for a second. You've sold, you know, we'll just roughly estimate around $120 million from the stage. Most people would rather be in a casket than to do public speaking.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Somebody like yourself, though, has learned how to profit from that in amazing ways. And it's allowed you to have the freedom, the lifestyle, and be able to support your family. And more than that, it's allowed you to give back and serve people in a greater way.
Sure.
So I'm just curious, what has allowed you to become one of the highest paid best speakers in the nation?
Well, as far as highest paid, it's all around sales. So some people go out there and become multi New York Times bestselling authors and have a keynote fee.
Just to show up.
Right, just to get there, my fee's XYZ. I didn't want to wait to go build some audience, some massive list and all that credibility.
Yeah.
I want to start getting paid to speak now. And so this is a way of speaking that some people don't even know exists, is finding someone who has a platform for an audience who maybe they themselves teach or speak and can't be in two places at once to say, hey, I can do this for you, right? So what I started doing is I learned the sales language of how to speak from stage, when they call it like the art of spoken copyright, right?
Yeah.
Like there's copywritten websites, but can you on the fly speak that
same way? All different vehicles. Some people do it, you know, online. Some people do direct mail. Some people do TV advertisements, and some people crush it from stage like you.
Yeah. And so Tony Robbins is a great example of that, right? And so I started studying the art of spoken copyright, of how to be persuasive, not just like NLP and all that stuff, but how to frame and how to pace and lead and all of that. And so I took time to learn that craft. And the way that I've sold 100 million and have made millions from stage is to find people whose products I number one believe in and have bought myself, right? Like I'm not going to go sell something for someone and hope that it works out for the people to buy it.
You actually believe in it.
It's my integrity in the line. So products that I've sold before, this is a great one. Anybody who's watching this right now who has been to XYZ seminar, bought their products and benefited from it, reach out to them and say, hey, how can I evangelize this for you? How can I, in a public forum, whether it's on stage, webinars, or whatever, help promote and further this along because it's impacted me so much.
Yeah.
That's literally what I did. And I did it well enough that eventually I was able to stand on stages in front of tens of thousands of people and market their products, right? Talk about my business and how it's worked well for me. And then more importantly, how it can work well for them. And those that move forward, you get paid a piece of times
all based on results.
Yeah, all based on results.
Most people would say, I hate selling and I feel icky. And I know that you and I both come from a sales background. And at the end of the day, Sales is really just aligning with somebody, understanding where they're at. And then out of integrity, of course, if you have, based on the level of understanding you have about that person, if you have a product or service that can help move that person in the direction of avoiding pain or gaining pleasure, then and only then can you actually engage in the next part of the conversation, which is, are they the right fit to invest at that stage in their product or service? So my question to you is, what do you do from the stage that allows you to move people in such a way that they're going to get up and go to the back of the room and buy?
Storytelling. I mean, they say that facts tell and stories sell. Mm-hmm. And so what you want to do with your audience, if we're talking specifically on how to move someone forward, I like how you prefaced it. If it's going to make them something like have less pain or more pleasure or whatever. Yeah. Again, it all comes down to believing your product. So if people feel, you said, icky about sales, everything's selling. Getting my three-year-old to take a nap is hardcore selling.
And she sells you if she wants to get ice cream or something.
Exactly, yeah. So everything's selling. And so you've got to believe that their life will benefit. Mm-hmm. And then something about the authenticity of that helps you to storytell. So that's step one, is you have to truly, as a salesperson, know that whatever it is you're selling will make the person's life better. It's, you can't get what they call commission breath, where just buy this because I've got rent to pay. Yeah. It's like, dude, buy this because the quality of your life will improve. And then the biggest thing is talking about how through stories, it's impacted my business, my life in a positive way, so that people can see themselves in my shoes.
Yeah.
So that people can see themselves making the same decision I did, which was buying the product. And so that's simple. And there's all types of stuff. There's a book written, The Greatest Salesman in the World by Og Mandino, which follows whether people believe religiously or not. It follows the storytelling or the parables that Jesus talked about to sell his religion, right?
Yeah.
Regardless if people believe in it or not, it's a great book to pick up on how storytelling or parables are the number one way to influence people of wanting to make a decision, and in this case, a decision to make a purchase for a product or service that will make their lives better.
I love that. And you obviously have mastered the craft. You know, you don't accidentally land at the top and sell $100 million from stage. So take this advice to heart, because it's amazing advice. And my guest right now is Cole Hatter. He's an investor and a serial entrepreneur. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Cole Hatter is joining me right now. You're an investor yourself, and you talk about something, the horse and the jockey. And which one do you bet on? So could you elaborate on that for us as an investor?
Yeah, so I invest in real estate. That specifically is angel investing. I love people like you who have phenomenal ideas to come to me and ask me for the seed capital or the first round to take your idea to whether market or whatever it is. And so the question in the angel investor community is, do you bet on the jock or the horse, or the jockey or the horse, excuse me. And so that is, the CEO is the jockey, the horse is the company. And so if it's a—
Uber is a perfect example, right?
Well, Uber, yeah. So Travis, who founded Uber, was an awesome CEO, and Uber was a fantastic horse, right? A fantastic product. And so the question is, and I would say if I had to pick one or the other, it's the jockey. I know CEOs, and I know that you do too, some of our mutual friends, who aren't necessarily the greatest CEOs, who their businesses fail, but would have been a phenomenal idea if somebody else would have been running it. On the contrary, I know people who are phenomenal CEOs who just outwork everybody, out-hustle everybody, who might not have the best product that they're taking to market. They might be inferior to someone who already has market share, but because that person works their freaking butt off, the business goes off to be success. So the question is, do you bet on the horse or the jockey? Do you bet on the company, the business model, and the industry, and how it might disrupt an existing industry or create a new one? Or do you bet on the person running it? And for me, it starts with the person running it first. Anytime someone comes to me and asks for money, and I literally have a place on my website that says, pitch me. So I literally get thousands a year of people asking me to consider investing in their business. First thing to look at is, who are you and why should I invest in you? Mm. Okay, now let's talk about your business.
So let's do that then. What does the ideal scenario look like? We've got, let's say, Susan. Susan comes to you and she's got this idea and she's going to pitch it to you. And you could care not as much about the idea as much you would about Susan, and is she the right fit to execute the idea? So what do you need to hear and see and believe about Susan to invest in her?
So she, as the entrepreneur, needs to have insane personal experience or industry knowledge of whatever product she's taking to market. Like, for instance, me, if I pitched you on investing in ballerina slippers, I've never been a ballerina, I've never worn ballerina slippers, and I might have found some special silk in China so we can do it cheap, but I don't know anything about the industry. So if Susan came to me with an idea, I would say, okay, what's your background then? And she says, oh, I worked in a corporation for the last 25 years that this was their product. And I asked my senior execs all the time to consider making this specific change because it would make the product so much better. They didn't listen to me and I got so frustrated. Now I'm doing it myself. She knows everything about importing it if it needs to be imported. She knows everything about the product knowledge, the industry. She already knows the consumer. She already knows everything. And she's taking all that industry knowledge, rebranding it and making it a better mousetrap, right? And then taking it to market. That's what I want to see in Susan. isn't, right? Or if that would be like a startup, or I want to see a serial entrepreneur that has 15 companies under their belt that's killed it every time. Does that make sense?
Of course,
yeah. So if it's a startup like Susan who's never been an entrepreneur before, I'm going to want to see industry knowledge. I'm going to want to know that she knows it like the back of her hand. Or if it's someone like you, I'm going to say, yeah, well, show me other companies. And we're like, well, I did this one and exited for a $200 million acquisition. Yeah. I did a little, I'll be like, cool, take my money, right? Yeah. Maybe not that easy, but that's the due diligence I would do on a person.
Okay, so that's what you're looking for. Now let's do the inverse. As our last thing about investing here, what is the worst thing somebody can do when they're pitching you their idea?
Just the opposite of what I've said, not being able to answer my questions, not knowing your product, not knowing, when I say, who's your
just
marketplace?
Just coming to you with an idea.
Oh yeah, I'll say, who's your marketplace? Oh, well, it's just like, they have to literally have everything figured out and all they need is a check. I don't want to invest in your company and then build it for you. Okay. I would just start my own.
They have to have a fire, know what they're going to do with the fire, and you're just going to put gas on it?
More than that, a plan, contacts, execution. It's literally the only thing they're missing is money. That's when you come to an angel investor, right? If you want a joint venture and do a partnership where I'm actually putting in intellectual capital and my own relationships, that's different. But to just write you a check, you need to have everything set up. Like literally, I'm moving into Target and I just can't afford to fulfill on the purchase orders that Target wants. I already have my product design. I already have my molds. I already have my patents. I have everything. Just write a check.
Perfect example.
That's what I want to see as an angel investor. Now, if you want to come to me as a partnership, then obviously you can be further along in the road. But for anyone listening to this, don't go pitch people on money because you got an idea in the shower yesterday and you've seen a lot of Shark Tank.
Yeah.
And so you think the first thing to do is go pitch. You have to have proof of concept. You have to have industry knowledge and you have to have a plan. I think that's the number one thing. You have to have a plan.
I love that. And whether you're an investor, whether you're an entrepreneur, you can even have a job. Sometimes, you know, we struggle. I know you and I both at the same time we do this, is we struggle to be able to quiet our minds. You know, when we leave work, when we leave the set, when we leave the stage, whatever it is, it's hard, even if we're on vacation, to quiet our minds. You know, you're with your family, you know, you could be with your girlfriend, whatever it is, you could be with your friends, you could be on vacation. It's hard to slow the mind down and be like, oh my God, I got to stop thinking about business right now.
Right.
And, you know, my question is, how do you ultimately figure out how you can unplug and quiet the mind? We both struggle with this. So yeah, I'm just curious.
I was just going to say, you tell me if this is something anyone can figure out. So what I do is I have to schedule in family time, not just because I'm trying to be a present father, but because I need that, right? Yeah. And I need to unplug myself. And, you know, in our round table earlier, this is one of the number one things I struggle with. And I've got crazy ADHD, so probably even more than most people. But quieting my mind is the hardest thing I do. And so you have to put yourself in a paradise, if you will. So how to shut my mind off, I have no idea. But how to continue to operate at a high level, I've just got to put myself and seclude myself in paradise.
Do you have any questions or quotes or stories that you live by? I think a lot of people cripple themselves with self-sabotaging questions or old story that they play. Maybe they live by a saying and it limits them. Maybe they have a metaphor about life. Life is, you know, not fair, right? Mm-hmm. And that limits them and they live life like that. People are bad, right? You can't trust people. They live by these sayings and these quotes and these metaphors. So on the inverse side of that, somebody like yourself who's, you know, achieved peak performance, you have an amazing life and family and you do a really great job of integrating all of it. Do you have any questions, quotes, or stories or sayings that uplift you and empower you and keep you in alignment?
As far as quotes, I live by one by John C. Maxwell. The guy's written like 150 books.
It says
one of his quotes in one of his books called Thinking for a Change. He says, the truth is you can spend your life any way you want, but you can only spend it once. And, you know, I have that written at home and I literally quote it anytime if someone asks me for a quote because it translates into everything, not just business, but as a father.
That's the perfect way to wrap the segment up. Cole Hatter, thanks for coming on the show, brother.
Pleasure.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
When you're in a leadership position, it is imperative that the people with whom you work respect you, but respect is never a given. Here are a few tips to earn more respect at the office. I'm Pat O'Brien with the Business Rockstars Minute. Number one, well, be kind. Always be polite to everyone you meet during the day, from your spouse and children to your coworkers. Give others the same respect you'd like to receive yourself. Number two, listen well. Listening is an active process, not a passive one. Actively listening by taking your own opinions and thoughts out of your mind and actually hear what the other person is trying to convey, you will make others feel important and validated. Number three, be willing to change. Being stubborn won't get you anywhere. Make an effort to grow as a person, learn new skills, try new activities, and especially re-examine your automatic behaviors. And don't forget to congratulate yourself on progress you make along the way on becoming a better person. I'm Pat O'Brien, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertising. This ad is sponsored by Case Legal Media. Attention! This is an important message for anyone that has been diagnosed with cancer after being exposed to Roundup or other weed killers. The Internal Agency for Research on Cancer warned that overexposure to Roundup and other weed killers may increase the risk of developing non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Monsanto, the manufacturer of Roundup, may have known that Roundup and other weed killers were likely linked to organ damage and cancer. This information was hidden from the public as proprietary trade secret since 1981, and Monsanto may have failed to warn of the potential risk of cancer. If you or a loved one has been diagnosed with cancer after being exposed to Roundup or other weed killers, you may be entitled to significant compensation.
Call us now at 800-972-1329. Our network of attorneys are ready to fight for you. You'll pay nothing unless there's a recovery in your favor. Call now for a free consultation at 800-972-1329. You must protect your legal rights. 800-972-1329. Again, 800-972-1329.
This is sponsored by the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, a contractor of the Beef Checkoff. After a long summer of pool party snacking and meals on the go, fall is the perfect time to reset the diet and jump back into a health and fitness routine. According to the USDA, we spend about 40 minutes a day prepping and serving food and cleaning up. So why not make the most of your time and revamp your refrigerator by adding in healthier choices that will benefit you long after the kitchen closes? Amy Goodson, dietitian and expert in health, wellness, and sports nutrition.
Now is the time to add nutrient-rich, high-quality proteins into your fridge that can make it easier to stick to your health routine. Beef is a complete, high-quality protein food that contains all the essential amino acids the body needs to support physical activity and a strong, healthy life.
The iron in beef can help prevent fatigue, and the protein in beef contains the optimal mix of amino acids for building and repairing muscle. For more, visit beefitswhatsfordinner.com.
Hey,
welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. My two guests today at the CEO Roundtable are, who are you and what do you do? I want to hear the elevator pitch.
Sure. My name is Felina Hansen. I'm the founder of Hera Hub, a shared workspace and business accelerator for female entrepreneurs.
My name is Tony Del Mercado. I'm the chief operating officer of Hawk Media. We're a digital marketing agency, predominantly CMO and outsourced digital marketing team.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you both here, and I'm really excited to just kind of share some of our best practices and some of the do's and don'ts of being a CEO and the ups and the downs. So let's start with failures. I think it's fun to talk about successes and achievements, but what we can all relate to as people, regardless of being an entrepreneur, is failing and making mistakes. So I'm really curious to hear from the two of you, what has been, and I have a big list myself, so I'm sure it's not easy to pick from, but what has been a mistake or a failure that you'd like to share right now, but one that more importantly had a big lesson?
I think for me, it was really the expansion of my business and choosing a path. I initially started down the franchise path and realized it wasn't a fit for the market and what we were doing. So we pivoted recently to a licensing model, and that has really worked for our business much better. But it was a painful mistake, a very expensive one, and a two-year process. So okay. Learned a lot.
What about for you?
I would say the biggest error that we made was in hiring people that were incredibly skilled, and we fell in love with their expertise as opposed to their culture fit or the way that they aligned with sort of our business objectives. It only happened a handful of times before, thankfully, we learned our lesson. But we hired some people that were incredibly gifted, incredibly skilled, but just didn't mesh with our mantra and sort of our core values. And that was a lesson hard learned, but I think we've corrected well from it.
I think that's the perfect thing of what you just said was hiring people that are incredibly talented, but they're not the right fit for the company culture. And so we all know, having our own businesses now, or hopefully we know, that company culture is what's going to allow our business and our people to thrive. And without our business and our people thriving, we're probably gonna have to close the doors at some point. So company culture is something that not a lot of business owners talk about. You maybe hear it from people like Tony Hsieh, who has a best-selling book about it. But at the end of the day, company culture is what really separates a company that's gonna be around for a long time and a company that's maybe just short-term success. So what are some best practices that you guys have for creating a thriving, abundant company culture?
Yeah, I'll jump in.
You jump in. You're the one that spawned this.
Yeah, I won't curse on your show, but I will say we have a tripartite mission or a set of values at Hawk Media. First and foremost, get stuff done. Get stuff done. Learn quickly and be cool, right? And be cool can mean a lot of things. You know, how are you when things are overdue? How do you interact with a teammate when maybe you're under the gun? How do you relate to a client that might be ultra demanding and those kinds of things? But as long as you can get things done, you can learn things quickly, and you can be calm under pressure and cool and communicative and empathetic in that relationship with whomever it is, those are biggies for us. That's at least our foundation.
And I love that because it's that easy. It's just going through, these are the three things that we stand for. It could be a huge list, it could not be, but you guys got it right there. It's simple things. You guys have probably this type of casual kind of laid back.
We do.
Right?
It's because
as long as you're in alignment with those three values, you're getting stuff done, right? You're laid back, you're chill, you're having fun. And of course, right, you're coming from a place of integrity and you love what you do. What are some things that you guys do?
So ours is learning and leading. So we very much have a learning culture at HeraHub for our staff, for our team, for our members. It's all about learning and growing, but it's also about leading. So being that example, that role model, and that's what I try to do for my team, whether that's me getting on the floor and cleaning the carpets, because I don't ask anybody to do something that I wouldn't do myself.
What is the hardest part about being an entrepreneur? It's fun to talk about or read articles or look online and look at these people that have these Instagram followings as an entrepreneur with a million plus followers because of their lifestyle and all this stuff. But, you know, maybe it's even the people that sell their app for $1 billion after a year. But the reality of it is that 99.999% of entrepreneurs are not living that lifestyle. Mm-hmm. That's not the reality of it. So, you know, it's not easy to be an entrepreneur. So I'm just curious from you guys' perspective, you know, what do you think is the hardest part about being an entrepreneur? It could be a list. It doesn't have to be one.
Sure,
thing.
Yeah. No, I mean,
first things that come to
there's
mind.
A lot of stuff, right? I mean, the first and foremost, the accountability, right? Just knowing that every single thing that walks out your door or everything that's attached to your name is attached to your company. And it's a very, I think, ineffective and weak leader that points down the line as opposed to taking accountability for those things. And that's not something people sign up for when it's one or two or even five or 10 people in a shop. But once you have 50 or 100 or 500 people on the payroll to really take accountability for everything that happens, I think that's a big ask. And it's really hard, right? And being willing to put in the hours and make some sacrifices to execute on those things is... It's not something that you see when you're just on your own kind of slogging along through the trenches. But once you have a staff, there's also a responsibility, not just an accountability for the output, but a responsibility to, in our case, there's 60 people that I owe a paycheck to a couple times a month. And I don't take that lightly. I mean, that's something that it weighs on me when I go home and when I move through my life. And if I'm not executing at a high level, I know that I'm jeopardizing not just my own livelihood, but also that of a bunch of other people. So yeah. I think just the stress, and it takes a certain kind of personality to be able to shoulder that. But that's probably the biggest one. It's just the accountability. The buck stops here, and being ultimately responsible is a big one.
And sometimes you don't have people holding you accountable because maybe it's just you. Maybe you don't have accountability partners, which everyone hopefully does. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I think accountability is a huge one because whether you're starting your own business and you're responsible for everything or whether you are growing a business, you're still responsible for everything, but now you're also responsible for everyone. Mm-hmm. And the bigger your company gets, really, I don't want to make a metaphor of like the bigger the burden gets or the bigger the weight on your shoulders is, because that's a bad way to look at it. Especially if you delegate and you learn how to adjust. But yeah, the accountability is definitely one of the things that is not easy to be an entrepreneur. Not a lot of people want to raise their hand and be like, yes, please, more responsibility. Give me more work. Give me more responsibility.
And wearing so many hats, especially as you start off in your business. You may be the best attorney in the world, but until you have the budget to hire a marketing person, guess who's doing the marketing? Guess who's doing the accounting? Guess who's setting up, you know, the email management system and things of that nature? And so I think a lot of entrepreneurs don't realize how much work really goes into building a business.
Thanks so much for coming on the show, guys. CEO Roundtable is complete.
Thank you very much.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
This information is given with the understanding that neither the host nor the station is engaged in rendering legal, accounting, business, or other professional advice. Since the details of your situation are unique, you should additionally seek the advice and services of a competent professional.